Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Combat Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Kiernan. If this is your first time tuning in, you can check out my archives here on Blog Talk Radio. I've had UFC fighters, other wrestlers, boxers, and I'm also interested in interviewing people from all different kinds of combat sports. Eventually, I'm looking towards karate point fighters, taekwondo fighters, even fencers. And also I'm interested in promoting the women in combat sports because although that's definitely starting to change, I would like to see more attention given to them and their efforts, you know, moving forward. This is a nonprofit venture. If I ever do have any kind of like GoFundMe or something on it, it'll be just to help pay for my kids' sports, but it's mostly meant for not only my personal enjoyment, but also just as kind of a public service to the combat sports community. Today, I'm going to ask you to pronounce your own name, sir, because I don't want to mess it up. But your first name is Jared from Penn State.
Yeah,
welcome to the show.
Verclearen.
Verclearen? I can repeat that. There we go.
There it is.
Well, thanks for coming on today. Jared, my first question that I always ask a new guest is, what was the moment that got you involved in combat sports? Like, was that, you know, like if you could describe what got you interested and like what your initial experiences were like?
Yeah. So I guess we'll take it back to, what was that? I was around 6 or 7. So initially I knew my dad was a wrestler at a young age and he wrestled up till high school. And I don't know if it was, I used to see WWE wrestlers like do their thing, and I wanted to wrestle. My dad, he told me no when I was like 6, but then the next year he allowed me to eventually go out and wrestle, and I kind of learned, you know, what it was, and I had some success, like pretty decent my first few years, and then but not too great, you know, like win half my matches, lose half. Then I had some success I would probably say 11, 12, 13 when I started actually understanding how to wrestle better. But yeah, so I was about 7 and I don't know, I just loved it. So I played all kinds of sports. I played soccer, did track and field, football, even swimming for a year. So I've been all around, but wrestling kind of stuck with me just because there's a lot that goes into that, but just a fun sport to do.
Kind of had a unique situation because of your type 1 diabetes that I had read was diagnosed when you were as young as 4. Do you think that might have played initially into perhaps your father's hesitation to allow you to be involved, or was it just in general a concern about combat sports?
Looking back on it, I think it definitely, you know, because I was diagnosed at 4, started wrestling at 7, so pretty new to diabetes and kind of how to manage it, but I didn't really do any of that. Like, I didn't give any shots. I didn't manage my blood sugar. I didn't even cook my own food that I would be eating. But my parents kind of handled all that, you know, wrestling at a young age. And they did a good job with that. And they kind of studied it and understood, you know, what foods did what, how much insulin to give. But, yeah, that I think that had a play in it.
Now, obviously, you know, let me get back to the chronology, first of all, of your wrestling experience, and then we'll talk more about the diabetes later. Now, obviously, moving on then from youth wrestling, you said you had some success early on. You know, this is always a question that's kind of relevant to everybody, and it's, you know, a topic of controversy in general. How far did you get in youth wrestling, say, before middle school? Did you win any state titles or place at any youth state tournaments leading up to that?
So, let's say I made the state tournament basically every year. I was a Area 4 in Pennsylvania, so not too, super loaded. So, I made the state tournament, PJW States, every year. I think 2 or 3 years in a row, I fell short of placing in the blood round, which is, I mean, that was my goal, right, to place at PJW, you know, and I fell short 3 years in a row. The next year I ended up placing 5th, and then the year after that I ended up winning my first PJW state title.
Right.
I was 12 years old then, and I went on to win another one the next year. So, yeah, started having success later on, but obviously – I failed a lot before that.
Well, and yeah, and that's, I think, an important part of that. The reason I bring that up is that the conversation is always, you know, about what they did later. But there's a lot of controversy, particularly in the youth wrestling issues, just in regards to, well, how successful was somebody early on? You know, so, and you, around 12, that's actually when my son actually won his first state title in Michigan, too. So it makes a lot
that's
of
awesome.
Sense. And I do think that it's not necessarily a requirement, but it definitely is not irrelevant either. You know, if you ran into any of those phenoms, for example, who started like ninth grade, you know, and then went on to be really well, I mean, I know they exist. Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of those guys I grew up wrestling, like, I mean, PJWs were stacked in my time. I think, you know, Pletcher was in my bracket a lot. Kemmer, Josh Shields, I can name a bunch of kids, Hayden Heidley, Nolf, I grew up wrestling all those guys. They're a year or two older than me, but they were in those brackets. So, I mean, a PJW title was accomplishment because it was just, it's hard to do, you know, it's hard to win. But, yeah, I grew up wrestling those guys, and I wrestled those guys at club practice too. For a long time. Chenzo even too. He, you know, all those guys grew up in my area, in my clubs, from a young age till high school.
How long do you think it took you to get involved with national level wrestling? Did you do any of it as a youth?
No, I didn't do any national. Actually, I mean, my dad would take me to tournaments and stuff. You know, like, I guess that wasn't until I was older, probably middle school and high school. Yeah, I didn't probably start traveling like far and doing that.
That actually segues kind of into my next question. Did you wrestle for your middle school, and what was your experience like?
I, like, in the summer at the middle school, or?
No, like, as in, did you participate in an actual middle school season?
Yeah, so I wrestled in middle school, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, I believe.
Okay.
I went undefeated, I think it was in 8th grade. I think I had all pins, but yeah. Or 8th grade, actually, I won a PJW state title. So I was still PJW, and then the next year they switched it to 8th grade is middle school, I believe.
Right, it's different in every state, and the reason I also brought that up is that that's also frequently a question, you know, depending on who you're dealing with. So, for example, like, we have a kid who's kind of a phenom here in Dundee, Casey Swiderski, and he didn't do any middle school, and it was largely because his father wanted to be able to take him abroad to other tournaments, and in Michigan, you can only have, like, two outside weigh-ins and still be able to participate,
really?
But... Yeah, but it's different in every state, and in, as far as, like, what benefit you get out of it, like, I've seen some middle school tournaments that are basically, like, you know, you get a lot of kids who've just never wrestled before, so it's, like, going all the way back to the novice division, and then I've seen some that were very competitive, so, you know, it's interesting. Now, I guess moving on into high school, what was your experience like in high school wrestling, and do you feel like it was a significant jump being a freshman from where you had been before?
So my high school career kind of started off rocky. So the end of my 8th grade career, I was doing the schoolboy duels, and we were in our team. Team PA was in the national finals, I think. Who were some guys in the team? Spencer Lee, Gavin Teasdale, Jordan Wood, some of those guys from PA that were tough. We were in the Greco National Finals, and I beat the dude the day before in Greco, and mm-hmm. we were in this weird position. I was winning the match, and I ended up tearing my labrum in a quad pod position, and I was out for the next 6 or 7 months. So that came all the way up. I was out most of my freshman year of high school. I didn't get back until, like, a month before the state tournament, like, not even, like, wrestling at all. But I actually qualified for states, but I struggled through every match. Like, I was just dead tired, and I was just really tired. And I actually, freshman year of states, I lost in the blood round. I was up 5-0 early, and I gasped and got taken down last second. That was a heart-wrenching match my freshman year.
Now, moving on then into your sophomore year. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, my sophomore year, I was, I don't know, top five in the state. I mean, I probably had a chance to win it. Just the guys above me were just better than me at the time. And I mean, who won? It was Solomon Chisco, I believe, Hayden Hidley. I wrestled Hayden Hidley for third place that year. And then Michael Kemmer, I believe. So that was those were all the three guys above me. I finished fourth in the state that year. And all those guys, I think, went on to win state titles.
It's interesting that, you know, like you hear names like Kemmerer, and my because I didn't follow Pennsylvania high school, that immediately pops Iowa into my head. And it's easy for people to forget that, you know, you may be wrestling for a completely different college. You know, but that's interesting, you know, and the names that people hear all the time, you know, I remember watching the documentary, for example, about Kyle Dake, and he pointed out that he was wrestling like David Taylor and Logan Stieber and all those names at one point or another during his youth. I think it was Logan Stieber, but definitely people that I had heard, you know, names for elsewhere. You know, and it's interesting, you know, you get back to it later and how many of those people you're wrestling still, you know, later on. So getting back into the chronology before we get too far off track, I guess we can move on to your, you know, your ending of your high school career, moving into like, you know, junior and senior. How did you do? Like, did you feel satisfied with the end of your high school career, and how did it come to an end?
So towards the end of my high school career, my junior year, I ended up moving high schools. So I went to Belle Vernon, and then I moved to Henfield, and I ended up winning a state title my senior year. My junior year, I didn't end up wrestling at the state tournament due to some weight issues and certifications and that stuff, but there's some articles on that stuff, but I ended up winning a state title and, you know, captured the gold that I was chasing since, you know, a young kid. So I would say I'm pretty high school with how my – or I'm pretty happy with how my high school career went.
Now, you know, you brought up the weight thing, and that kind of comes back to what we were discussing earlier about the diabetes. But, man, how does one manage their weight with type 1 diabetes in a sport where people are kind of encouraged to, you know, drop a lot of weight?
I think it definitely adds a level of difficulty, because when my blood sugar – so I wasn't cutting too much weight last year. I'm a little heavier now, so I need to start getting my weight down for the season. But I think when my blood sugar drops, I have to eat carbs. So carbs, they kind of – they're the things that put on weight for most wrestlers and people in general. So when you cut carbs out, you tend to lose weight. But when my blood sugar drops, I have to eat carbs, so it can kind of throw my weight off if I'm not doing a good job with it, or if it's kind of messed up, or I'm giving too much insulin. Can definitely throw my weight off and just kind of mess with my weight.
So, but overall, yeah, man, I mean, having to eat carbs, especially if you're trying to maintain a weight class, you know, it's generally considered to be difficult. You know, no carbs is pretty much how my son has to do it, because he's one of those kids who just does not have a bunch of extra padding, you know, all over the place.
Yep.
You know, but it seems like you persevered and you got through it. And it, you know, I hope that other kids who, you know, have diabetes can look at your example and realize that, no, you know, this is possible. You can do this. Have you ever had an opportunity to do any kind of outreach to help kids with diabetes think about their athletic possibilities?
Yeah. So every now and then I get messages on, you know, Instagram or Twitter about, you know, some younger kids who are struggling with diabetes. And I mean, there's so much involved with managing it and stuff like that. But I think just staying focused on your goals and, you know, the adversity that you're going to face, and everyone's adversity is going to be different. You kind of just have to stay focused on your goals and learn and adapt to what you need to do, you know, and just don't get down on yourself. Like, obviously it's going to be a little bit more difficult to wrestle at a higher level with type 1 diabetes, but you can still do it and be successful. And that's still kind of what I'm chasing. You know, I'm chasing a national title. I mean, I haven't had a chance to do it yet. Last year I qualified for NCAAs, but it got canceled. So I'm still, you know, that's still a goal that I'm still looking forward to.
That's something I kind of wish, because Flo is kind of playing around with having some matches right now, and I wish they would create a situation where they could have folk-style matches where they put, you know, guys who were ranked, you know, up against each other for the NCAAs, you know, to get an opportunity to try to see who could have won that year. We have this bizarre situation where our season was canceled. I'm not a freestyle person. I like folk style and I like Greco-Roman, surprisingly. But I was kind of, you know, feeling at the end of the season that there were a lot of lost opportunities. And my son was lucky enough to get into our state championship for youth, like right before everything closed, like literally everything closed, like 3 days after we got back. And, you know, but there are a lot of kids who didn't get to that one. There's two state tournaments in Michigan and, you know, and they all just kind of, it leaves everything hanging. You know, it's like that one final, it's like
really
watching three quarters of a movie. So now getting back to chronology, describe then, you know, so you won one state title and you placed some, you know, you had a good career wrestling with a lot of good wrestlers. So what was it like to be, I mean, if you can just tell the story of being recruited by Kale Sanderson for Penn State.
So actually that's another story all on its own. So I originally committed to Iowa State on a full ride. And they're the first visit I took. I had other visits set up, but I committed, you know, on my first ride. My mom, she's all sad. She doesn't want me to go this all so far away. And I don't know. I just, after committing, I didn't have the best feeling in my gut that it was the right decision. And then a few months later, the coaches ended up getting fired. And then they kind of were looking for a new coach. I was kind of waiting to see who it was going to be. But after they got fired, I kind of looked at that as an opportunity to, you know, open up my recruiting process again. And I think Penn State, I've always had this feeling that I wanted to come wrestle for Penn State and wrestle for the best. You know, Kale Sanderson, Casey Cunningham, Cody, they're the best coaches, you know, probably in NCAA history. Or they might be once they're done, but I wasn't heavily recruited by Penn State. I probably wouldn't say, you know, like they were dying to have me as a wrestler, but I kind of that's what I wanted. So I took all my visits. I think it was Minnesota, Ohio State, NC State, Lehigh, and then Penn State. So everyone else kind of offered me, you know, getting into the money of it, but they offered me a good chunk of money. Penn State, actually, they didn't offer me any money, but I just decided, you know, this is what I want. I don't know why, but I'm going to walk on to Penn State. So I'm actually a walk-on technically, but yeah, I think it was a tough decision to make just dealing, like looking at that end, because there's a lot going into it, but I think it's all working out.
Well, no, obviously it is, and now you're a starter, you know, and that's the part about it that I think is interesting is that, you know, you kind of made a leap of faith and you managed to get on the team. I have a lot of friends who went through that experience. One of my kids' coaches is Joe Randina. He was on Cornell's squad, but he was never able to, you know, to break the lineup, and it still did great things for him. You know, and obviously, you know, going to Cornell was a great experience for him, you know, but, you know, so I think a lot of people, you know, they look at that opportunity, you know, and like he would never trade it for anything. I mean, he's friends with good people. Like, you know, he's always telling me Kyle Dake texted me the other day and said X, Y, or Z. And, you know, but the other thing I think about it is that kind of like, because, you know, your story is not unique and that there are other people who pull that off. But to do that at Penn State and be a walk-on and make the lineup, that had to have felt really good.
Yeah, so I think it did feel good. I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, an easy decision, but I just felt like that was where my heart was taking me. I think that's where I just wanted to go for some reason, right? I mean, obviously, they have had a ton of success wrestling-wise, and you know, I have aspirations of winning. I've always wanted to win an Olympic gold medal, a world title in wrestling at the highest level. And I think I don't know. I think God put that on my heart to come to Penn State, and I just kind of, you know, I did, like you said, I took a leap of faith, not knowing how it's going to work out, you know, with everything, but it worked out really good.
Yeah, that's the other element to it that, you know, I often talk to people about when they discuss things like money and such. I've actually had, for example, one of the junior college coaches on my show, and there's so many opportunities in wrestling for people outside of being recruited by a D1 team. And, you know, I would urge anybody listening to this broadcast to take an opportunity to listen to my show with Grant McKenzie from Henry Ford College, because just because your kid didn't get recruited D1 doesn't mean that wrestling is over for them. You know, so anyway, mild sidetrack. So now you get recruited, you know, you come into it as a walk-on, and this is an experience for everybody, you know, but what was the leap, you know, like for you anyway, from high school to college, you know, just like even just from your first practice?
I think there's a big difference in a lot of things. Technique definitely being one of them. Obviously, it's a minute longer as well, so it's a 7-minute match, so conditioning plays a factor. New coaches, new teammates, new school, you know, college curriculum at Penn State isn't the easiest, so you have to adapt to that. New friends, you know, who you're living with. Just there's a whole bunch that goes into that, but what was the question you asked? How did I adapt?
Oh, just like how did it feel going to your first practice, and how did it compare to your high school experience?
I think it was awesome, you know, seeing those guys that you watch on TV, Zane Rutherford and Alf Bow, you know, now you're on a team with them, you know. Now you're seeing how they're drilling, you're seeing how they're practicing, how they're living their life, you know, and you kind of have to, is this what you want to do? You know, you have to make those decisions. Like, is this how you're going to live your life? You know, these guys are all multiple time national champions. You have the best coaches in your corner. So you have every opportunity to be successful. Now you just have to make that decision.
That had to have been great. I know a lot of college wrestlers tell me that, you know, they get the crap beat out of them. Like there's an adjustment period basically where they go from, man, I was like a, you know, a 3-time state champ from, you know, Minnesota or wherever. And then I went into that room and I just got killed all day long, you know? And that was a big, you know, adjustment. And then, you know, for different people, obviously, like, you know, if you've watched the Flow movie about Ben Askren, he described it as being really, really, really rough when he got started. It's good to see that you pushed through it. And I can imagine, you know, were you kind of starstruck then, more or less? Like you said, seeing those people that you watch wrestle on TV and they're in your practice and you're with them?
Yeah, it definitely is. It's kind of overwhelming at first. But then you kind of, you know, you get into the groove of things. You get to know those guys. And then you kind of are just focusing on getting better in the room.
That's excellent. Now, you said that, you know, this is another kind of question I had in regards to just like being a college wrestler who has international aspirations. You know, you want to work on the Olympics. What is the, I guess, if you're actively wrestling in college, how much time do you even have to devote to freestyle, and how do you approach it? Like do you just kind of throw it in the middle, or is there just certain times of the year that you do it, or?
So usually during the season, you're focusing all on folk style wrestling, but we have an RTC, you know, the NLWC that's where all those guys are training, Nolf and all them, so, Nolf Zane. So every now and then you can come in if you have a class conflict and work in with those guys and practice with those guys if you can't come to practice. So you can wrestle freestyle during the year if that's what you want, but most of the time you're just focusing on folk style and the folk style practices.
Now, so then basically you just kind of finish your season and then more or less kind of take it from there is what you're saying, you know, is that
you kind of just switch
modes entirely.
Yep. And then basically all summer wrestling is freestyle, which I love freestyle, right? I didn't wrestle any freestyle last year because I decided I wanted to wrestle a little bit of Greco and Mason Manville. And we had another guy, Ben Provisor, in here, 2-time Olympian, Mason Manville world team member. And I kind of, you know, all Zane and all those guys were going freestyle, and I was like, I don't want to really cut this much weight. Greco was a few pounds heavier. So I decided to go Greco, and I finished, I don't know, fifth at the U.S. Open, I believe, and qualified for the World Team Trials at Greco, not really having ever practiced. I mean, I used to wrestle Greco, you know, in my younger days, but so, and I feel pretty comfortable upper body, but that was fun to dive into, wrestle a little bit of Greco.
Do you feel that coming back to folk style from Greco, that it changed your perspective?
Maybe a little bit.
I mean, did it affect your folk style, I guess?
It's a completely different way of wrestling, kind of. It's a lot of position wrestling. So at the U.S. Open, actually, I was wrestling both Greco and freestyle. Not really knowing how I was going to do, how tired I would be, you know, juggling diabetes, wrestling. I think I wrestled like 8 or 9 matches that day. And it was just like a lot. And I won my first 2 matches in freestyle. Then just after finishing, I wrestled, I think, 5 matches in Greco. And then I won a few matches in freestyle. And then I wrestled Alec Pantelio in the quarters or something, and he beat me. And then I ended up losing my next match. I was just dead tired, though. And so I think I can compete with, you know, a lot of those guys right now in freestyle, and I love freestyle wrestling. So if the Olympics are something that, you know, is still on my heart, once I'm done with college wrestling, I would like to pursue that.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. Do you think you could have done better if you had only done one style that day? You just have more energy?
Yeah, I think definitely I would have done better. I've had some success in freestyle. I mean, I've won a lot of freestyle state titles in my youth, but I've actually made 2 cadet world teams. I actually won a cadet world title in freestyle when I was, how old was I, 17. So
wow.
We traveled over to Bosnia. Who was on the team then? Yanni was on the team, Dayton Fix, Gable Stevenson. Who else was up there? Those are some of the guys. But
that sounds like a great experience. What was it? Was that your first international experience? Like outside of the
state?
So
that was my second.
Or out of the country.
That was my second. The year before that was in Slovakia. And I was on the team with Spencer Lee, Gavin. I think Jordan Wood was the heavyweight. I believe Dayton Fix was on that team. Some of those guys.
That's crazy. You can remember all these names like that. I was thinking about that even when we were discussing it earlier. But, you know, what was it like wrestling people from other countries? Does it have a distinctly different feel to it? Do they have, like, you know, just drastically different styles than what you wrestled in the room?
Yeah, so everyone asks that, and I think, you know, it really depends on the wrestler, too, but, yeah, I think you'll see a lot of other countries have different styles of wrestling, you know, just because of however the way they practice, whatever their conditioning is and stuff like that. But the Russians, the Iranians, they know how to wrestle in a lot of positions. They're really good both offensively and defensively. So, I mean, yeah, there's some positioning things but at the end of the day, wrestling is wrestling. You just kind of have to play around, be in those positions, and just kind of feel your way around them.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think in my son's case, one of the reasons he didn't like freestyle is he's very funky. And what he found was that if he did freestyle and folk style at the same time, it would cause all kinds of problems with his reactions. But he found that Greco did not interfere with his folk style because he only went into Greco mode if somebody was upper body with him. He'd like to try to make they just added a 15U division a couple years ago. He'd like to try to do the Greco world team at some point. And that's why I was curious what your experience was like going overseas and if it just felt different, you know, wrestling outside of the country. And you had all these experiences also being on the same team as these people now that obviously, you know, moving forward, you know, do you feel that you keep the friendships from those experiences, even though you're on different teams? Like, you ever run into those guys in the NCAAs and say, hey, you know, do you remember such and such day when we went to this party or whatever with people that are not Penn State wrestlers.
Yeah, I think you form these memories with them, and, you know, you see them, you say hi. Not necessarily, you know, you're all buddy-buddies like you were at that time period, but, yeah, you don't just forget those memories that you've had or being on a team with those guys and stuff like that when you see them. And, you know, they remember too.
Yeah, that's definitely great. So I guess now getting back to just kind of current events, obviously your season was cut out. I know at least on the youth level, things have kind of transformed into, you know, practices where you can find it. It's in garages, it's in basements, it's in barns, or it's in the few private club facilities that are staying open despite the lockdown orders. There's video of Kyle Dake literally practicing in a garage somewhere. You know, what has your experience been like with COVID, you know, as far as like, how are you getting your practice, or are you able to?
So the NOWC, they opened sometime when midsummer, I believe, after quarantine and all that stuff. And, you know, I wasn't on the mat for about 3 months. And I walk in, I'm all big and stuff, and everyone's like, "Whoa, Jared, you got big." And I'm like, "Yeah, I haven't really done anything." So I think, so right now we're on a break, but I was practicing for a good month and a half. But right now we're in quarantine for Penn State. So we started yesterday, August 14th, and we have to quarantine for 2 weeks. So we're not practicing right now. And then hopefully we get back into rec hall here soon. I know that we all have to do COVID testing, so hopefully they don't shove something up my nose too far and then I die or anything, but yeah, that's that.
Well, I've been COVID tested and I survived, so I think you'll be all right. Just
you're
a little
survivor.
Uncomfortable. I was fine. I didn't have it, thankfully, but you know, that's kind of the question that, you know, like on the youth level, it's the same problem. And what I think is going to be weird is that some people didn't stop practicing at all because they were fortunate enough to have the resources to do that. And then some people did, they had no choice. And my total guess, at least in the state of Michigan, is that probably 70% of the kids have nowhere to practice, you know, and it, as long as this goes on, you got to think it's going to drastically change the landscape when the season finally starts. And I would imagine that's going to be similar for college. If you guys are going to be in a scenario where perhaps you set back foot on the mat and you're like, "Man, last year, you know, I couldn't even touch this guy. And now I just crushed him. And, you know, come to find out, maybe he didn't wrestle at all." It'll scramble things up for sure. I mean, and have you guys talk to anybody else who's just like, "Man, I don't have anywhere to go. My state doesn't have anything going on, or, you know, my team can't figure out a way to practice." Is there just kind of a general idea that people are just going to quarantine and then be able to practice?
So, yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, after quarantine, we're going to be able to start practicing rec hall. But I don't really know, you know. I think we just had a meeting with, you know, the coaches and everything, and they kind of gave us the rundown of what the season's going to look like with all the protocols and all the stuff that was placed on it. But I don't really know what it's going to look like, you know, just like everyone else.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm kind of curious because I think that on the state level too, they're doing the same thing. It's just everybody's kind of kicking the can down the road. Like, they're like, "Oh, we're just going to move it to spring. Maybe we'll move it to summer." And I honestly kind of feel like they're doing that to placate the masses. My gut instinct is telling me that unless something drastic happens, they're probably just going to cancel it all over again. And that's really unfortunate for everybody who's working. And as a result, there are a lot of people I know going to tournaments they normally would never go to, being hosted by organizations like New Way or RMN, and USA has been pretty quiet. World of Wrestling finally opened up again. But I think another thing that's different is that there's word out that some of these organizations are even trying to figure out ways to offer people like you matches. Because if there's no season, I mean, what are they going to do? It's something they can tell you no. You know, it's the same thing with high school. What are they going to do? Are they going to take a year of eligibility away? Okay, well, there wasn't a season, you know, let them wrestle somewhere,
yeah.
You know, and have you guys had any thoughts about that?
Oh yeah. I've been, you know, thinking about that a lot and kind of if I do lose a year, another year of eligibility, you know, where does that put me? You know, I'm going into my senior year now. I do have two more years of eligibility, you know, but basically my whole college career kind of not ever wrestling at an NCAA tournament would really stink. And I don't know, it throws off everything because, well, you know, some of the seniors, would they want to stay another year? I know, like, talking to Mark and some of those guys, like, if they did get another year, I don't know if they would have taken it or not, but yeah, it's definitely something to think about and not fun to think about.
Yeah. It's kind of hard even to bring up. I was just curious if you had any insight, but so now kind of rewinding a little bit before all of this insanity, Penn State seemed to be kind of in a rebuilding phase. Like I noticed like the whole energy of the team was definitely different. Like you guys were still doing really well, you know, but it wasn't just because of the rebuilding. There was also just the issue of the Olympic redshirting going on. Like I went to watch U of M wrestle Iowa, and like the entire, at least most of the heavy hitters of the U of M staff were gone, not staff, but you know, roster were gone. Cause they're all like Miles and me,
yeah,
and such. They're all wrestling, getting ready for the Olympics, you know, so we just got clobbered. The only match that we had that was really competitive was watching Mason Paris because he's not actually currently redshirting. You know, and he gave us the one victory we had with, you know, he beat Iowa's heavyweight and it was a really exciting match, you know, but that's another thing that changes the landscape drastically is these Olympic red shirts. You know, something for me and my son, he kind of, you guys are his favorite team. So, you know, he idolized people like Nolf and Nickel, you know, and when
yeah.
You have a situation with college, you know, the teams can change so drastically. It's one of the reasons why I never watched college football back in my early years. I just watched pro is because you never knew what the team was going to be like in every given year. Penn State's been fairly consistent in their success, but you know, Cale's model seems to have these, you know, brief periods of rebuilding. Would you say that's more or less where Penn State was at last season? And how long do you think, I mean, like if we did have a season, do you think we'd still be rebuilding or would we be seeing Penn State, you know, just unleashing like they did when, you know, they had that crazy lineup that, you know, just turned so many heads?
I think Penn State for the most part is, you know, always in, I think the coaches do a good job of always setting up to, you know, have a shot at the national title. I think, yeah, last year we did lose a few NCAA champions, but, you know, we still had Mark Hall, Chenzo. We still had some good guys. We a little bit younger team. And I think, you know, this upcoming team is going to be young as well, you know, just kind of young guys that they're going to prove themselves. We got some good guys coming in. Good guys that redshirted last year, gray shirted, and I think if we would wrestle a season, you know, Penn State would have a great shot at winning a title. But in years to come, you know, these guys, we'll see how, you know, me and not just me, but all these guys do in their development wrestling wise and maturity and strength. And I think they'll have good shots of winning, you know, multiple national titles, some of these guys that are going to be on the lineup the next few years.
I look forward to it, and I'm trying to, you know, now I'm in that same phase that I'd always kind of struggled with trying to watch college football back in the day. It's like trying to get to know, you know, the new names and find the new people that I like to follow, you know, but mostly I think what Penn State did in comparison, you know, to so many others is that they, first of all, you guys all have solid fundamentals. There's no question, you know, but you also have this enormous creativity. And I've been told that Cale encourages that. And so you get these guys who, you know, I think Jason Nolf, for example, probably could have just stuck to completely fundamentals and won NCAA titles without any problems. But he wasn't just a fundamental guy. You know, he had all kinds of other crazy stuff up his sleeve and, you know, the willingness to take risks, the fact that you guys always seem to be having fun, you know, and I guess describe what that's like, you know, in comparison to your years in high school, you know, like, because obviously you guys are serious, but there's this energy going on that you're all so casual, you would think you were at a party,
Yeah, I think in high school it's kind of all – it's really structured how everything is set up and done. I think once you're kind of at the Division I level, you know those fundamentals, and you know that you're supposed to be in good stance, good head position, keep your feet moving. You know what setups that you like, and I think Kale just – our coach Kale does a good job of just letting you develop as a wrestler and, you know, the things that you're good at. And he encourages creativity and fun and taking risks, because those are all things that are going to, you know, you're not going to be stressed if – you shouldn't be stressed about, you know, shooting a shot or doing this, doing that. And I think coming to the Penn State room, it's something that's helped me a lot and puts wrestling into perspective, where, you know, it's not the end of the world if we don't wrestle or if you lose, something like that. That wrestling's just wrestling, you know, stuff happens and it's not the end of the world. So I think just opening up and just being yourself, like, why wouldn't you want to have fun out there and just put on a show for the crowd?
That makes a lot of sense, and actually kind of brings me to another question, because this is something that everybody struggles with, but perhaps because of your diabetes, you have a unique experience. I was reading an article about this, was that you literally have to avoid adrenaline dumps because it'll cause problems for you. My son isn't diabetic, but adrenaline dumps have a huge impact on his wrestling. Fortunately enough, I mean, I got him signed up for Wrestling Mindset, and that helped a lot. You know, but for you're in a scenario where an adrenaline dump isn't just going to affect your technique. It's going to affect your ability to get through the match. So what kind of strategies have you employed over the years to, you know, just to keep yourself calm and in the moment?
I think it's something that I'm still working on. And obviously as I get older, I think you're going to get better with managing stuff like that. But in high school, I didn't really worry about stuff like that. And, but once you get to college, kind of, it gets a little bit more stressful and, you know, a little bit more is on the plate now. And especially wrestling for Penn State, you know, you want to do a good job, but you can't let that stuff affect you. But for me, yeah, I've been stressed sometimes wrestling, and it's caused my blood sugar to go high. And I do my best to, you know, win those matches. Some of the matches I end up losing, you know, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it is what it is. And as you wrestle and you evolve as a wrestler and grow, you know, I think I'm going to get better with that and be able to finish matches stronger. But yeah.
Did you ever have to change your strategy based on the notion that you may have a problem with gas tank that'll be caused by your sugar that you have no control over? Did you ever have to say to yourself,
yeah,
okay, I need to finish this one quick?
Yeah, I mean, so I like, if I get to the leg, I like finishing my shots, and obviously I want to get ahead early, you know, but I think just staying relaxed, you know, relaxing your muscles, not being super tense when you're wrestling, just controlling your breathing. Those are some of the things that I've learned that kind of have helped me. And just kind of, you know, Coach Kale does a great job of just putting it into perspective, like, it is just wrestling, you know, it's not the end of the world. So why am I going to stress about it? You know, if I lose, I lose. So what? Kind of the mindset that he kind of gives us, and I think is helpful.
And I think the benefit of that, ironically, and it was the same thing with my son, was that if you're too fixated on the winning or losing, you actually can create self-fulfilling prophecies for yourself and fail.
Yep.
Just because you're focusing so much on that. There's a Bruce Lee quote saying that, you know, you should not be thinking of whether or not the match is going to let, you know, whether or not the fight is going to end in victory or defeat. Just let your tools do their work. And, you know, it made a lot of sense. So you're ironically, you know, it's a delicate balance, because you don't want to be completely unserious about what's about to happen, or you'll be completely unprepared.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, if you over-prepare, and I think that's the sweet spot people are looking for, that is so elusive. And it's also, I think, different for every person. You know, everybody's personalities are different. My daughter, for example, if the situation was tense, she would get hyper-focused and arguably become way more dangerous. Whereas my son, you know, like when we went to a Greco state tournament once, he was so worked up that he went out and lost matches to kids that he tech-falled literally the week before, and he hadn't changed, but his mentality was completely different. So, you know, anyway, I was going to ask, you know, if you could look back now on your career, getting to where you're at now, knowing what you do now, is there anything that you would have done differently if you could look back, say, on your youth years and then on your high school years? You know, different questions, you know, basically, but different, you know, whatever answers you have. If there's anything you look back on and think, you know, I really wish I had done X when I was a youth wrestler.
You know what? That's a good question. I don't know if I would necessarily have changed anything I've done, you know. I've had very supportive parents that, you know, they push me to do my best, you know, and kind of not put too much stress on me, but they've always taken me to clubs and the best places to work out, the best tournaments. So I don't know if I would have changed anything about my youth wrestling or not.
What about high school?
High school, I think everything worked out the way it should have. And I think ultimately it brought me to Penn State where I want to be, you know. Maybe if I would have changed something, I might not be here.
The butterfly effect.
Yeah.
So I guess then if you were going to look at, you know, a youth wrestler now who's, you know, looking at you when you step out on the mat at Penn State and, you know, that's their dream, that's what they want to do, you know, what advice would you give them to get them to that point?
I think, well, you obviously have to work hard and have success in wrestling, but I think it's just really the desire of just being the best wrestler that you can be. Obviously Coach Kale wants to recruit guys who want to be national champions. So if that's your goal and you're hitting those mile points and, you know, youth wrestling, middle school, high school, you know, you've had success. I mean, you're gonna get recruited, and if you're not recruited, still you can have success if, you know, you turn it on at the next level, and you see that.
So, how involved were your parents in your coaching? You said that they took you to the best, you know, practices and clubs and such when you went to Matside, and you know what? How involved were your parents? There's always questions about, you know, the role of parents versus coaches and such. I seem
yeah.
to think that there's a kind of a distinct pattern that generally parents are pretty involved in most of the wrestling, at least successful wrestlers. You know, Kyle Dake's dad, David Taylor's dad, you know, there was no question how much involvement they had. Kerry Colad's dad, you know, would you say that they were intimately involved with what you did?
I mean, I think they have had, I mean, obviously a part of my success, you know, they've pushed me and they kind of instilled the values in me that, you know, will be successful, but I wouldn't consider my dad my coach or my mom to be my coach. You know, they got me to the places where, you know, good coaches would be, and they kind of, for the most part, you know, obviously they could be hard on me sometimes, you know, like, come on, Jared, open it up, shoot, just be yourself and stuff like that. But I wouldn't consider them my coaches throughout my youth or now.
Yep, definitely everybody's experience on that is going to be different. That's why it's so hard, you know, especially when I got started, you're trying to find what works, you know, and there's so much controversy about topics like that, and it's difficult to figure it out. And I guess in some cases, you know, if you find the right coach, you know, then it won't make any difference. But I've also seen kids who, you know, basically their parents were convinced just to drop their kids off twice a week, and then they don't really ever experience their potential. And I guess at that point, you know, it would be, maybe it's time to find a different coach. But, you know, it's such a difficult conversation to have, because you have kids who are the exception, and then you have kids that, you know, that gets basically whatever the exception was gets considered to be the norm. When in reality it isn't for everybody, you know. So now, if you had to, I mean, obviously I know, like, you know, Kale's kind of a secretive guy, but you know, how would you describe his coaching style in comparison to what you experienced in high school? How much of an adjustment was it for you?
I think it's definitely different. I think just, you know, obviously Coach Kale is the best. So, you know, if you're a guy that's looking to come to Penn State, anyone listening, if you come in and kind of just, you know, you listen to what the coaches say and, you know, you ask them questions, you get them to help you with your wrestling, I think you're going to have a lot of success here at Penn State.
I've heard that he is not tolerant of people that basically, like, if you're going to be the kind of person who pushes people around or, you know, is a toxic personality, that he doesn't have people like that on his team. Would you more or less say that's the case?
Yeah, I think Coach Kale, I mean, I can't speak for him, but, you know, he wants guys who, you know, aren't going to party or going to get good grades. They're going to, you know, live a good lifestyle and also going to be good wrestlers, you know.
For sure.
Because you got to do all those things, but yet you still have to be a good wrestler too. You know, you can't just do those things and expect you're going to be a good wrestler, because that's not how it works. You have to work hard in the wrestling room if you're going to be a good wrestler. And I think that's some of the things that he looks for.
And balancing, you know, all of those things together can be very difficult. There was something else Joe Rendina talked about, was what it was like to, you know, be participating in Cornell, an Ivy League level education, and at the same time trying to be able to wrestle on an elite level. You know, so I guess if you could encapsulate, then share with the audience any specific moments in your time in wrestling that you feel stick out for you, that, you know, like when you get older and you're telling your kids stories, you know, these are the moments you're going to tell them about.
I have to think about that one. There's so many. I mean, just being in the Penn State room, you have so many memories with these guys. Maybe I'll tell them about the time Bo Nickel almost chugged three milk bottles in under a minute.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know, something like that. But he was like a second off, so, and it was, I think, chocolate milk. But yeah, he almost did it. I think there's $15 on the line too. But he was close.
Mitch Clark tells stories about being dared to eat chili peppers of various intensities. You know, if you ever go to any of his camps, he tells that story usually at least once. And he played around with like some super ridiculous ghost pepper. And he definitely paid for it, but he got it and he did it. So
that's awesome.
But you know, it's like, as you said that in your, obviously your first memories go immediately to the fun moments that are outside of wrestling. You know, were there any specific matches or accomplishments as a wrestler that, you know, you look at your wall and that really stick out to you? I mean, I say your wall because that's where
most people
keep their medals and trophies. But
I don't know why I thought of this, but coming in as a freshman, you know, I was redshirting my freshman year, but they still had me wrestle off. And obviously I was 149 and they had me wrestle off Zane Train. And I'm like, oh, great. but, you know, Coach Kale, he comes up to me, he says, just wrestle him hard, you know. And I think I ended up taking him down, but I think he beat me up pretty bad. And Coach Kale, he said you still got him once, but he beat me up. But I don't know, just stuff like that. There's a lot of them, but I think some of those.
Well,
things
that's still
are,
you know,
are
that's
good.
Quite a, you know, that's definitely quite an experience, and that's what pops in your head. You know, there's got to be a reason for it, and the wrestle-off experience is always a tough one, and depending on your team, it may or may not even impact whether or not you end up in the lineup. Like, I remember because Mitch Clark spends a lot of time at Cornell, you know, and he was one of Ben Darmstadt's mentors, you know, growing up. And Ben Darmstadt used to come to all the camps, and he would teach the assassin. And, you know, I kept asking him how Ben was doing, because to us, you know, Ben wasn't just a guy on TV. He was somebody we used to see on a regular basis. And, you know, he apparently lost the wrestle off by like 1 or 2 points, but then went on to beat like the number 3 guy in the country that year at some tournament. And then he ended up on the lineup anyway. You know, it's crazy how things can work out like that. And, you know, just to say that you had an EMAT time with him, and, it's interesting that you got that opportunity anyway, just to say, hey, you wrestled Zane Rutherford, now, as far as like team dynamics, and getting along with everybody, obviously, Penn State has a reputation for being fun. Do you guys, how does the room change though? When some of these big personalities like Zane and Bo and, and all move on, would you say that does it change anything, or is it still pretty much just the same environment with new people?
I think the environment is pretty similar, but yeah, like you said, there's just new people in there. It's still going to be kind of laid back and relaxed, and, everyone's cracking jokes. Some people's jokes aren't funny, some are, but yeah, it depends on the person and the personality. But those guys, Bo and Zane and Nolf, they're still in the room, we see them. So, but yeah, they're not on the team anymore, so it is different still.
That's interesting. So I know that you're doing camps and clinics now, or at least, trying to get that started. What can people expect if they go to one of your clinics? What kind of techniques are you planning to show? And how would they reach out to you? I mean, I ran into you on Facebook, but is there another way they could?
Yeah. So Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I believe my handles are Verclaren J, or just type in Jared Verclaren. It should pop up. And technique wise, I'm showing whatever really the coaches want me to be showing. I show a lot of counter offense stuff. But everything I'm showing is kind of stuff that we're learning in the Penn State room, or just that I've learned over the years. So if you're looking to set up a camp, if anyone's listening, just hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and we can try and set that up with some time left that I have before the season starts rolling.
Yeah, and I really do hope the season gets to rolling. It's definitely been great talking to you today, Jared, and maybe we can have you back on again some point, and hopefully get in touch with anybody else, like I said, from Penn State, or even any other wrestlers, who might be willing to come on and have another conversation about wrestling like this one. If you don't mind, I'd like to call you briefly off the air when we're done here, and we're now coming up to the end of the hour. So thanks everybody for tuning in. If you guys are interested, I'm actually going to be talking to Max Askren tomorrow about coming on. And NCAA champion Mitch Clark is also talking to me about coming on. And I'll be looking for more guests. So if you are interested in coming on, or if you know somebody who might be, I don't even really care what stage of their career they're in. If you're a serious, honest, and passionate athlete, I would love to have you on. And, of course, you can talk about anything that you're promoting at that time. So just like, for example, Jared's clinics. Jared, can you give him that information one more time on how to get in contact with you?
Yeah, so just contact me through Facebook. I believe it's Jared Verclaren. Instagram is Verclaren J, and Twitter is also Verclaren J. Just slide into my DMs, and I'll give you my number, and we can try and set up something if I have any time.
Okay. Thanks again, Jared, and I'll be calling you separately on my phone when I'm done here. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. As I said, I'll be talking to Max Askren tomorrow. I'm going to see also about getting some more MMA fighters on. I discussed with Alicia Zapatella. She's a ranked atom weight. She's got fights coming up. Josh Parisian has also talked about coming on. My kids actually practice Greco at Scorpion Fighting Systems, where those two fighters are staged out of. So, and thanks again for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.